It's Tim Dre. Thanks for listening to the Workers' Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, celebrating over 60 years of fighting for economic security for all. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards with the MCL. To my right is Ed Maher. Good morning, Ed.
What's happening, Ken?
MCL as well, and we recorded live.
Yep. It was a lot of fun.
It was a blast, an absolute blast at Cafe Bionda. Thank you so much to them for letting us use the space.
For
Thank
sure.
you everybody that came out.
And to ABOC for sponsoring the live event.
That was massive. Thank you to ABOC and quite frankly, all our sponsors. It was really, right. really cool. So we had recorded a ton of content mm-hmm. that day. So we're going to start, we're going to be playing this throughout the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Clips here, clips there. And I think today we're going to play Jim Sweeney.
Yeah, we had a great conversation with Jim.
Jim Sweeney from Operating Engineers Local 150 here in Chicagoland.
Every time we've had him on the show, we get feedback from people on what he says. And I'm not only saying that because he used to be my boss, but it was good.
He's still your boss.
He'll always be my boss.
Same.
But he'll... So stick around and listen to that. We'll have that coming up in the next segment.
Yeah, it's really cool. So let me just ask you this, Ed.
Yeah. You got a look in your eyes, Ken.
there's a case that just came down. I forget where it was, but it opened up the door for gambling on presidential elections. What could go wrong?
I mean, yeah.
gambling money now in politics?
I was thinking about how I might make like $50 on this, and that seemed harmless. But yeah, now that I'm getting a little deeper, right? Yeah, for sure.
I guess it starts with the presidential election, and then it's going to be able to go into House races and Congress.
Seems like a bad idea.
Oh,
I mean, you
God.
Can gamble on anything, but I think they should keep politics empty. Because remember, Elon was going to do something where he was going to give like, what was it, like $50 million a month to Trump?
He changed his mind.
You could do that and then just bet $10 billion on the outcome.
Don't you think?
Yeah, you got to spend money to make money.
You could basically tell everybody, hey, everybody, I'll give you $10 to vote for candidate A and then just bet $12.
Yeah, it's like a much more work-intensive version of like buying every lottery
ticket. It's a really bad idea. However, I will offer my services, and that is to the candidate that you're looking to beat, just let me bet on that candidate because I'm a guarantee. The cooler,
we could just try to get a job working on behalf of that candidate and sink the whole thing despite our best efforts.
You think you're number one, you got the greatest, or your favorite to win, Ken bets for you and you lose.
Yeah,
like our pool is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
our football pool,
you're not doing well.
Yeah, okay, well, it's early yet.
Yeah,
so anyway, listen, take a quick break and then we're gonna come back. We're gonna listen to our clip from
Jim Sweeney,
from Cafe
week.
Bionda, and then we'll come back with more right here on the Workers' Mic, 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, recording today at Cafe Bionda. Super stoked to be here. Beautiful day, by the way, outside, right?
Beautiful Friday.
It's amazing in Chicago. As soon as Labor Day hits,
best weather of the year.
It just immediately drops, 10, 20 degrees. So absolutely perfect. Good beer drinking weather. And speaking of beer drinking, we have Jim Sweeney on from Local 150 of the Operating Engineers. You are the president business manager, correct?
Correct, sir.
And how long have you been president business manager of the Operating Engineers?
17 years or something like that.
How long have you been an operator?
45 this October.
Whew! 45 years.
Round of applause for that.
Get my ring.
45
all right,
years. 45 years.
Wow.
And for those of you that don't know, for a short period of time, you were a Chicago firefighter.
Yes, I was. That's how I knew about a work stoppage.
So, Ed, you worked at Local 150, as did I, mm-hmm. for a long time. I was a quote-unquote lawyer there. And Ed was the comms director there. So, we had the chance to obviously work underneath Jim Sweeney for a very long time. And I came from the Newspaper Guild. So when I moved to Chicago, I come from New York. Obviously, a lot of people, that I worked for the newspaper union. And this was 1999, I want to say. And one of my neighbors, a lawyer, was moving to Denver, Colorado. And his name was Stan. And Stan said to me, hey, Ken, I'm moving to Colorado. Do you want my job? And I'm like, well, where is it? He's like, oh, it's in Countryside, Illinois. I'd never heard of it before. I'm like, who's it working for? He's like, the Operating Engineers. And then I got there, and It was then Bill Dugan and then Jim Sweeney. But they let me and my department and all the lawyers, quite frankly, it was when they had a motto. It was like, make them make us stop.
We were the ones. It was odd. We were trying to be the voice of reason with lawyers. It's usually the other way around.
Yeah. So, but
no,
I mean,
no,
so
we've pushed the envelope with everything. Everything we've done from 1986, when I came out as an organizer, until today.
When you came on, how many members were in Local 150?
There were 9,000 members.
And how many members today?
Roughly 24,000.
I mean, you talk about growth.
We were organizing under Ronald Reagan. When everybody else was running for cover.
Under PATCO and stuff.
Yeah, we attacked. Yeah.
The trend line of union membership has gone the other way over the last 30, 40 years, yeah. But you've managed to more than double the membership, almost triple it.
How?
Never taking no for an answer.
Yeah,
good. Pay lawyers to get you out of trouble, not to keep you out of trouble.
And you did one thing I think that was smart, and I think the building trades are finally doing this, at least in a lot of places. The operating engineers had their jurisdiction, but then you started to organize everything around that jurisdiction.
At the end of the day, winning an election doesn't mean shit. It's about getting a contract. If you don't have a contract, you haven't done anything. And a contract has been approved by the people that you're organizing.
Correct. Yeah.
That's your goal. Your goal is not to win elections.
Winning elections is the easy part. I've always said that. I'd rather lose an election by one vote than win the election.
Well, we didn't even take elections. What we would do is we would get cards signed, and at that point, when we got 70% of the card signed, we would approach the employer and demand recognition. They would immediately do something stupid and fire or retaliate against one of the workers, which is what we wanted. And we told the workforce, this is our approach. They knew what was going to happen, so they were immune to the surprise, if you want to call it that.
Right.
And we would file an unfair labor practice charge and use the board against the board, that being the labor board. Use the rules that the lawyers and the law firms have been using for the 20 years prior and turn it on its head. And we would use the picket as a tool. And, you know, we were organizing under Operation Wrench equipment rental companies at that time. And we would follow those trucks then with our guys driving those trucks.
Yep.
Phone calls back to the task force agents that were trailing those trucks. And we would get to a site, they would be dropping off man lifts or forklifts on a job site, and we'd put a picket up, and the rest of the brothers and sisters that were working on the site would look at the employer and go, I'm either going to leave or you get rid of that truck. And off the truck went, and the one union company we had signed would be the one that would get that work. And then we would use the greed of the salespeople.
And it worked.
But that was because the industry we're organizing, we had leverage to be able to get a contract. That leverage was the unions in the building trade sticking together. And that worked. We did the same thing with pits and quarries. That stone would be brought to asphalt plants and concrete plants that we were running. So we would be able to leverage that power against those employers. And we continued to do that with all sorts of industries and to the point where we got to where we are today.
So you put economic pressure on the employer, and you practice what I was considered board avoidance, right? You were trying to avoid the labor board.
Absolutely. I didn't want an election.
Okay.
Once I got card signed, to me, yeah. The commitment has been made. The vote is yes.
That was your election.
Why do I need anything else?
Why do you need
these
to
are grown
have
men and women that were signing these cards.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and that hasn't changed. We still do it that way. And quite frankly, we just got done with a strike for a landfill in Newton County, Indiana.
Okay.
Where our guys are they run the bulldozers and all the heavy equipment up in that landfill as they bring the garbage out.
Yep.
Well, the garbage is all coming from Chicago. And that was what we knew. You know, we walked out on strike 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
Knowing fully that they would fly in scabs from Texas, which they did.
Right.
And they filled the landfill with scabs, and our guys were sitting outside. And then all the non-union trucks were crossing our picket lines. But we knew where our strength was with the Teamsters who had vowed to help us here in Chicago. We followed those trucks back to Chicago, put up pickets at all the transfer stations. And as the city truck drivers started bringing garbage in, they would honor the picket line as well.
That's
so
great.
It took 3 days of picketing. We had prior 3 weeks of picketing, did nothing.
Right.
And in 3 days, as those transfer stations filled up with garbage and there was nowhere to put them, we mysteriously got a settlement.
Good for you.
And
good.
A signing bonus of $1,000 per man for the heartache they put him through.
I love it. A little extra.
But again,
yeah,
that's union sticking together. Right. That's Local 731 stepping up
of the
and
Teamsters.
Doing the right thing with the Teamsters.
Yeah, that's great. That's really, really good. This goes back to what we talked about when we started this coalition, you know, when Janice hit the right to work for all public employees, was if unions stuck together and actually stuck together, like really stuck together, not just talk the talk, right, and go to a meeting together and have a rally or pat each other on the back or whatever it is, but actually really stuck together and leveraged our economies of scale, we could literally change the world. And, you know, we started with five unions with this coalition. You were there, number one. And, you know, today we have 400 locals, 300,000 members. We have doctor's offices now, right? We're pushing the envelope. The world's our oyster. So if unions actually stick together, like you just said, I think there's nothing that we can't accomplish. And I'll tell you another thing, Jim, and I think I want to hear your opinion on this. The Starbucks, the Amazons, the Chipotles, and the stupid hot dog place, Portillo's, challenging the constitutionality of the labor board. I say, be careful what you ask for. Right? Because the labor board goes away.
I'm an advocate of getting rid of the labor board. I'm an advocate of self-help.
I knew
more done with self-help.
Right.
I get more done when I put the board on ice.
Yeah.
And not just the last couple of years. For 30 years, we've done it this way.
Say what self-help. You say self-help. What does that mean?
I can solve the problem myself. Whether it's brothers and sisters having the right to engage in secondary boycott that scares the about everybody, right? Because you're not supposed to do that. But truly,
go ahead.
Truly would.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, like, take this to its logical conclusion, and we've said this when Janice passed as well. It's like, you know what? Here's the law of unintended consequences. Be careful what you ask for, because you're going to have minority contracts. You're going to have unions not representing some people. You're going to have people fending for themselves. And if you get rid of the labor board, how do you resolve a dispute on the job? Guess what? You walk off.
Right.
Right? You stop working.
Everyone walks off.
Everybody walks off.
Oh, I'm working. Well, you got a contract. Yeah, walk off.
Yeah, well, you can't
That's
do that.
That's what we used to do.
Yeah.
That's how we got to where we were. The only reason they created a labor board was to put restrictions on us.
Absolutely, to prevent strikes.
Yeah.
Because strikes were affecting commerce. It wasn't the Labor Relations Act, by the way. People think, like, oh, Labor Relations Act, this is great for unions. No, it wasn't. It was for companies, because we were going on strike all the time.
And their only relief was to go to the federal court system. And the federal court system was getting clogged up with all of these labor disputes.
Yes. And now, so speaking of that, and we're getting in the weeds here for a second, but with the getting rid of Chevron, where Congress can defer to an agency, like an OSHA, a DEA, whatever it is,
absolutely,
for their expertise, that's gone now. So guess where all those cases are going to be? They're going to be in federal court.
And
guess what they're not going to have enough of? They ain't going to have enough judges. So guess what? There's cases delayed. You want to get rid of the labor board? Go ahead. We'll see you in court in 13 years, right?
It's the only reason I'm sticking around this long. I'm waiting for the final demise of the labor board. I don't want an organizer.
Hold on. That's why you're sticking around?
Pretty much.
Because you
dissolve.
Jim, Jim built a house right like next door to the Union Hall.
That's for when I do retire and I come back and watch the.
First of all, that's he's got his window shade open. I see what you guys are doing.
When you think about how, you know, union support is up to what we said, 70% amongst the public right now. That means that if I'm an employer, I'm actually scared of getting rid of the NLRB, because then if all these people want to form unions, then it's going to be chaos and they're going to have no structure around.
Yeah, chaos. Absolute chaos.
But, I mean, unions have to do something with that.
Exactly.
I mean, it's one thing that's our problem. If it wasn't for that, we could get these, we could organize more.
Right.
Oh, come on. Quit making excuses.
There are 100 plus million workers in the United States that are not organized.
Want to join unions.
And they want to join unions.
They want to join unions.
And we need to provide them with a way to do it.
But again, you have to show them it can be done.
And not only that, like you said, look, I give Starbucks all the credit in the world. Congratulations to those workers that have fought the fight. But to this day, they don't have a contract. And they were banking on this CEO, like, oh, we're going to, you know, blah, blah, blah.
But
guess what?
Darth Vader came in,
and now he's the guy from Chipotle, and he's the union buster there. Yeah. So,
well, what are they doing? You need to get in their face. You need to create a situation where they feel the heat. Picketing out in front, and letting half of the workers go in. Yet they need to get together, and they need to walk out at once and walk back in at once and walk out at once. Create havoc. Create chaos.
Yes.
So the employer, it's not worth fighting anymore.
That's right.
You have to do that. And you're never going to win. You're not going to negotiating nice over the table gets you nowhere. They have to fear you. If they do not fear you, you are not going to get anything.
So you cut off the supply of Starbucks for like a couple hours one day, you'll see the results by lunchtime.
Oh, yeah.
Well, like you said, Jim, look, like you said, who's driving those trucks and who's delivering those products, right? It's probably, in at least in Chicagoland, it's the Teamsters. So maybe they all get together in Chicago and go, hey, we're all going to strike on this day and everything stops. You would hurt them economically like nobody's business if there's no Starbucks for one single day in Chicago. Then they're going to fear you. Then they'll feel it, right? All of a sudden, maybe there's stock and you go to their board members and you go, hey, what are we doing here, right? Why are we doing this? Are we chasing good money after bad? How much have we spent? Is there a shareholder lawsuit, right? Hey, what are we spending all this money for to fight these people when we actually could have paid them what they're asking for and saved money?
Right.
Well, there's a million ways at this, right? But labor has to stand up and do it because nobody else is going to do it for us.
Every campaign is different.
Correct.
But you have to approach it with, how am I going to get a contract? Not how I'm going to win the election.
Yes.
How am I going to get a contract?
And you have to,
what do I got to do?
That's right.
Any way you can create some chaos is good.
Let's pivot real quick. You just had and you have an annual golf outing, and you just had it, correct?
Yes.
And where does the money go for that golf outing?
For the last, how long?
It's been about 10 years.
We have been supporting the Navy SEALs Family Foundation, which is a foundation that's, first of all, 98 cents of every dollar gets to the families. And what they do is they hire therapists, psychologists for the kids who go through some horrible situations sometimes. And I mean it where one day the father is there or the mother's there, the next day gone for 13 months.
Right.
And you don't know where.
No way. Can't talk to them. Puts incredible stress on kids. Now you couple that with what recently just occurred with COVID and what we've seen social media and a lot of what has come out from the COVID restrictions with children, especially young girls, we have seen some horrific situations. So we've supplied psychologists. We've created these spousal clubs that create support within the units. And then, of course, God forbid, there's a death of a SEAL. We help to bury them and take care of the family. So we started out nearly 10 years ago trying to help this organization. If anybody had seen the movie Lone Survivor, in that movie, in the beginning, there's a whole scene of, a wedding with the SEALs. Well, Axelson's wife, who was a survivor, was one of the ones that founded this group.
Okay.
And they were literally working out of a garage.
Wow.
Trying to supply in any way they could get money to do all the things I just said.
And how much have you raised through your golf outings for them?
Well, we started out the first year, I think we raised almost $275,000, $300,000. And last week we raised $1.3 million.
I mean, that's amazing. That's good impressive. For you. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's the construction industry itself. That's not just me, Local 150, or anyone. That's everybody from the carpenters to the laborers who help out to the Teamsters. It's our contractors. It's everybody stepping up, putting everything else aside, saying, if our country won't take care of our warriors' families, we will.
That's awesome. That's inspiring. And I know that labor, right, once again, we're all best-kept secret. A lot of unions have outings or events or charities or golf runs or fishing tournaments or just a ton of stuff, A, for families, and B, for autism and this or diabetic, whatever the cause is. It's not just like, hey, we're going to take this money and put it back in our coffers. We're actually going to give that money to a charitable cause to try and help people that need help, right? Like your Archery Avenue Parade, that money goes to Protect the Vest, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah.
Chicago
Police have to replace their vests themselves. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, which is crazy, by the way.
That parade goes towards that. And we raised about $150,000 this year.
That's amazing. Yeah, so just for that parade.
That's part of being a union member, is giving back.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's all union. It's union participation is really what makes it work.
Right.
Yep.
It's not just about union members. It's not even always just about working people. It's about doing the right things in our communities.
We also don't, you know, we don't participate, like, we don't get that word out there enough. You know what I mean? We don't toot our own horns.
That's why we're here. Yeah.
That is why we're here, right? You know, get the word out.
Give ourselves a little pat on the back.
Yeah. Jim, you want to say anything good about us just real quick before you go?
By you all?
Yeah, of us, yeah.
We need this validation.
You can see the bead of sweat pouring down.
I remember once Jim gave me a compliment. Once
I throw them around like manhole covers.
I'm making a joke. Listen, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it.
It's great. Come on. I do want to say this is a great forum, and we are getting the word out. I hear more and more good things about this. So that's about all you're going to get out of me.
I'll take it.
Thank you, Jim. Don't press your luck, and let's go.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'll take that. Everybody hear that? Jim just said something good. All right, listen, thank you so much, Jim Sweeney, President, Business Manager, Local 150, the Operating Engineers. We will be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor. Ken, Ed, that was Jim Sweeney. I could listen to Jim pretty much forever.
For sure. My favorite part, though, is at the end where he told us that we did a good job.
Well, we made him say it.
I mean, I think he might have felt obligated, but that doesn't change the fact that he said it.
It was the first time ever.
Yeah.
2 decades.
Yeah, I'm going to listen back to this.
Yeah, we should play that before you go to sleep at night.
Yeah.
Right?
It'll help ease my anxiety.
Anyway, look. This is labor, right? This is what labor should be. This is what labor is here in Chicagoland. You know, I think we get used to it, Ed, right? Because we're here and we have a ton of unions like the operating engineers and everybody else in the building trades that push.
Right.
You know, the Unite Heres of the world, the Teamsters 727, you know, just everybody that's like pushing
carpenters.
The envelope. Carpenters, sprinkler fitters, like you like name
pushes,
it.
Yeah.
You know, these folks are just pushing.
We're spoiled.
And look at the wages.
I know.
The wages are just, kudos to everybody for holding the line, getting the wages that we deserve, and getting the market share, because the only way you get the wages is you get the market share, right? And so I want to talk about, real quick, Boeing. Right, Boeing, union-made machinists out of Washington State, I believe, correct?
Right.
And I think they also have another plant that they moved down south of, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was South Carolina. It was a whole big thing.
Right, that don't bring them union jobs down here, you know, something stupid like that, right?
Yeah.
Was that South Carolina?
Yeah, I think it was South Carolina.
Was that Nikki Haley?
Yeah, because she was at the time saying they were trying to organize the plant, and she said, if you want to make these union jobs, you can put them somewhere else.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, I've always disliked Nikki Haley for that simple thing.
Agreed.
It's like, we don't want our people to make lots of money.
Yeah. And then, of course, she flip-flopped and, you know, backed Trump anyway, even though she said they're staying in the race forever, and then dropped out and backed Trump.
Yeah, it's one of those I'll never understand where a governor can say, we don't want those good jobs.
We don't want those tax-paying jobs.
And the majority of voters are just like, yeah.
Not anymore.
I think things have definitely changed.
People are waking up and seeing the light. Yeah, we want to keep wages low here.
Did you know, I mean, speaking of the South,
yeah.
And we'll jump back into Boeing, but in Tennessee, there was just a thing this week where the automotive batteries are made by a company a lot of times called Ultium.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of UAW organizers went to this Tennessee plant. There's about 1,000 workers, I think.
Yep.
And they got all the cards signed by the workers. The cards were shown to GM, and GM recognized the union.
It's amazing.
They said, we're not going to interfere.
Good.
The majority of people want this.
Good.
This is, you know, we're going to let this happen. That's a welcome story after.
Why do you think that happened? Do you think it's like a sign of the times? You think that they were worried about the strength of the UAW given what just happened? Like what?
I think it's probably a combination of those things. The strength of the UAW has got to be a factor.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, GM has such a large unionized workforce that taking 1,000 people and bringing them in, and this is in an emerging industry, the battery is only going to get bigger and bigger.
Right.
So I think that if their plan is just to try to innovate, then why stall it? Why delay it? Why add cost? Why add problems by fighting over this stuff? I think that they've probably realized that the difference in what you pay to have this fight just isn't worth it if you have
good people and you're paying them well. So you're saying cost-benefit analysis.
I think so.
Yeah, well, I mean, that hasn't stopped Amazon or Elon Musk or any of these other companies that don't do cost-benefit analysis, Starbucks, you know, case in point, Trader Joe's, et cetera, that will spend more money, time, effort, and shareholder money, by the way, because they're public companies, on union busting.
It's one of the great sort of enigmas, especially for publicly traded companies, because you would think that there's enough data out there to show that when you fight a union effort for 2 years, you spend X number of dollars, and it goes through anyway, and you pay people more. And in the long run, it would have cost less and been better for the business, less distracting, less, you know, PR damage.
But don't they have a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders?
Yeah. Right?
Isn't that what you always hear? Like,
for sure.
Oh, we had to make these draconian cuts because we have a fiduciary.
We have to get the share price up.
We need to get our shareholders more money. Isn't there at some point somebody smarter than me could find this out? Because I've always asked this question or thought about it. Is there not a shareholder lawsuit that says, Company X, you are spending, and I'm saying the word X, I don't mean Elon, but I'm just using that as an example. You're spending more money fighting employees than it would cost us to pay them a living wage, a union wage, whatever that case may be, and therefore you're not being responsible stewards of our stock price.
Some clever attorney who's listening this morning is going to take your idea, run with it,
and become a
trillionaire. Make a lot of money, and you're not going to get any of it.
Yeah, you're welcome, Mr. Class Action Lawyer.
Yeah.
I know about this.
Ken Edwards, helping the class action attorneys since 2024. Listen,
as you know, I think a lot of people that know me, for the most part, I'm an idea person.
I was going to say, you're an idea guy.
I'm always an idea guy. I don't really put a lot of my ideas into motion.
It takes a lot of work.
And, you know, working is not easy anymore as I get older. But, you know, stuff like the MCL and doing other cool stuff we've been able to put in motion. So not like I'm not trying. But, yes, I have lots of ideas, but not enough time or expertise to do them.
It takes a man to say that, too, because
I appreciate you saying that. It is the truth. I know. Look, that's why it was nice. You know, I'll go back to working at Local 150 and having a legal department and people like Dale Pearson Rob Hostin and those really, really smart lawyers and those lawyers that are around us. You know, the Travis Kettermans, and now we have Dennis Johnson and Jeff Kroll. Like, these are really smart folks. Like, when we started
that are down for the cause.
For sure. Like, Joe Helio was there, Vince Winters. I'm just tossing out names right now, but lawyers that were in the room that you can vet and go like, hey, what do you think about this? What about this idea? And, you know, some of them have said, like, do you remember when we sued Lincolnshire to stop paying taxes over Janus?
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's give it a shot, you know? And it was not unfounded. We didn't get, sanctioned for a frivolous lawsuit. It was just like, let's try a couple of different things and see what happens, because you never know.
You can't win them all, but sometimes you have to put your toe in the water.
And
comes out in the decision that you use for the next
thing. And Ed, isn't the conservative movement in the United States, like, aren't they really good at this? Like, they just throw a bunch of test cases out there to see, like, how do we chip away at labor, right? How do we chip away at workers' rights? And they continue to do so. And by the way, they continue to win. It's not like labor, you know, you're seeing labor on an upswing right now, but it's not an upswing because of friendly labor laws and friendly judges and a friendly Supreme Court. It's in spite of those.
Right.
Right? It's because the workers are finally fed up. That's why you're seeing this upswing. Imagine if we had a Supreme Court that was legitimately neutral. If we had a government that was legitimately took the heart of the National Labor Relations Act and said, hey, we support collective bargaining. Right? Yeah. Imagine if we had all that stuff. And I think maybe there's a chance that we'll get it.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, if, let's say, workers across the United States made 10% more money or 15% more money.
Yeah.
There's an even larger than that growth in tax revenue.
Of course.
The government could afford to do things or afford to pay for things that it's currently doing, maybe. But, you know, more money out there, it means that people won't yet have to eat all the cats and the dogs and the pets in Ohio.
I got to tell you.
I just want to finish the show so I can get home and check on my dog. I'm worried about her.
Yeah, that's right. You got a dog.
She's big and lazy. Ellie. And she's like the dog equivalent of veal because she's big and she doesn't move around a whole lot.
So she would actually be like a buffet.
We are not going to Ohio with that dog.
That is one of... And by the way, you know, everybody heard that. Everybody heard this, and he said it with all seriousness. That and this we're talking about. Former President Trump said that, you know, immigrants are eating
the dogs, pets, the cats,
dogs and cats in Ohio. And people like literally chuckled and laughed, and Ohio said, "Like, no, that's not happening. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard."
Yeah.
And then instead, what does he do? He doubles down on it and says, "Now they're getting the geese."
I heard the geese. And actually, I mean, if
they're going to eat something, I think goose is like legit food.
Well, Canadian goose is federally protected because of treaties, animal treaties that we have with Canada. So if I were to go out and harm a Canadian goose, it's like a felony.
How do you know if it's Canadian?
I think there are, well, I don't know. I mean, I know a Canadian goose when I see one.
They speak Canadian?
Yeah. Hey, they're really
immigrant,
friendly.
Don't eat me.
Yeah, they're very polite. When you ask them to please get out of the way, they do. But the ones that stand in the middle of the
those
street and stop traffic, yeah. Those are like Jersey geese. Those are their ancestors came from Canada to Jersey yeah. and lost their good manners.
I'm walking here.
Hey, I got the right of way.
That's funny. And we're not even talking politics. We're just talking
geese.
Yeah, pets.
Yeah, yeah.
They're eating your pets.
Well, like, the fact checking was kind of funny because at the end, Vance was like, you know, the mayor didn't say that it didn't happen. He said he didn't have all the evidence. And the guy's like, he said he had zero evidence. It's like, right.
Doesn't that mean it didn't happen? Yeah, it's like zero evidence it happened.
I swear, I understand why people hate politics so much.
It's really getting out of control.
Everybody is just, you need a translator.
I got to tell you, I didn't watch a lot of it because I get agitated.
For sure.
But I watched the debate. And, I mean, it was an absolute disaster, in my humble opinion, for Donald Trump. She just baited him, threw the bait out. He took it, hook, line, and sinker. So it'll be interesting next couple.
He said that he won the debate so badly that when you win,
yeah, you don't have to do it.
You don't need a rematch. It's the loser that wants the rematch.
Yeah, I think he came out, and within like a minute of the debate, he's like, you know, I've already seen the polls, and it was 86-3. Yeah. I'm like, 86-3 equals 89. What happened to the other 11%?
I feel like if I had like a fraction of this self-assuredness or you know, it could be like a good thing at times, but this is just way too much.
Yeah. You would do well like with the ladies back in the day if you were that self-assured, right?
And your dad gave you $1 billion.
That is a good point, right? And you have a massive safety net.
Yeah,
and your name is on a bunch of buildings.
An apartment made of gold. You know, it's like Saddam Hussein up in that like tower of the golden toilet.
I think you'd see it. Oh, yeah, right? And so here, I think, can we see it from the Trump
Tower, see it out
right?
The window.
And so his name's on this giant building here, and, you know, for those of you that don't know, he built a building here and, you know, built it with union labor because here in Chicago, he has no choice.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't that he wanted to. But
yeah,
anyway,
shout out to Ken Derry, the tower crane operator, who put out a book of all the pictures he took.
Oh, super cool. I remember that. Yeah, super cool. So anyway, so he builds this building, and then unbeknownst to anybody but him, he slaps his name up there in
giant
letters.
Four-story tall letters.
Yeah. And the city could do nothing about it.
They tried
to. They could do nothing about it.
Can you imagine how good that's got to feel for Trump? Like the city wants it gone.
To this day, he got one over on the city of Chicago, and it still says giant letters Trump. But just recently, he got in trouble, and I guess they lost a lawsuit or whatever. They take water from the Chicago River, and like 20 million gallons a day, and they use it to cool the building. When you do that, you have to follow some EPA rules, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he got banged for that.
Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe they can settle for just get rid of the T and have it be Rump Tower. You probably get more people staying there.
That's a pretty good point.
Staying at the Rump Hotel.
So what are we going to go back to the Boeing strike? Yeah. We got off.
Windy road there.
So, hey, Boeing machinists, right? International Association of Machinists have represented the workers at Boeing for quite some time. And these are obviously the people that build the planes, take care of the planes, mechanics, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously, Boeing has had some issues lately, doors flying off and things of that nature. I don't know if it's because people are overworked, not a lot of safety protocols. I'm not sure what the answer is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess they had a deal, Ed. I think that the machinists had a deal with Boeing.
The union made a tentative agreement and brought it back for a vote. But 95% of the members voted to reject the deal.
Now, I wonder if that – let me ask you this. Is that strategy on
– if the union's just saying, like, if that's your best, we'll take it back to the members.
Right.
Because that's a real thing that happens. And frankly, probably a responsible way to handle last best final offers.
I think that's right.
Like, if you think I'm kidding and you think that I'm telling you this isn't enough but it's a great offer,
right,
let's ask your workers what they think. And when you see 95% reject it – That's a big deal. And so those 32,000 workers hit the streets on Friday.
And I think the last offer, if I'm not mistaken, was about 25% over 4 years.
Yeah.
And the
next model of Boeing plane would be built in Washington.
Yes, that was a in a deal. Unionized facility.
Right.
Right? And so...
Job security.
Obviously, it wasn't enough because the union, I think, was asking for 40%.
I think that my guess is they're taking a sort of a new approach to looking at negotiations for people that are coming out of contracts that span these years of high inflation, where they're saying, you know, if we had 4% over the past 5 years,
right.
our members lost 3 or 4% every year. So sure. we've got to make that up.
Right.
And then we'll talk about future wages. And it may sound like a lot, but there are unions in Chicago that are doing this, that are being successful and that are getting record contracts for their members by this kind of approach.
Well, once again, you know, you hear this, right? You hear these big, you know, massive numbers like, oh, we want 10% a year. And you got to remember, it's not 10% of $50 or $60.
Right.
Right. It's 10% of $20, $21, $27. That's all of $2 and change. And like you said, hopefully that makes up for some of the inflationary costs, the fact that we haven't had raises in quite some time. But then, you know, if you look at it from the employer's perspective, we have a lot of money, right? We just got contracts to build blank number of new planes. That equals billions and billions and billions of dollars. We're a profitable, you know, going concern. We can afford to pay the workers.
Yep.
And you have to start to share the wealth. And I think that's what the UAW taught, you know, the big three auto. And I didn't say taught, you know, I think they knew it was time to pony up, right?
Yeah.
And I think Boeing is going to learn the same lesson. You're going to have to pony up to the worker bees that make the planes. These people are not replaceable, Ed. You can't like go like, oh, we'll have somebody else fix the plane today. Come on in, Mr. Scab. You can
right.
fix the plane.
Right.
I wouldn't get on that plane.
No, I mean, we've seen what can happen to the reputation of a company or a manufacturer when something goes wrong with an airplane.
Right.
right. So, you know, best not have that happen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not a threat, Boeing.
Don't make me boycott Boeing.
Oh, God, this Portillo's boycott's killing me.
Yeah,
there's Portillo's, right. There's Trader Joe's.
What's the other? Airbus?
Yeah, Airbus.
Right, that's another. I forget who else makes planes.
Bombardier.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Nice, good
you
call.
Like that?
Yeah, I like it a lot.
A little French shout-out.
Really good. So, all right, listen, we got to take a break, and then we'll come back, wrap up the show right here on the Workers' Mic, 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back to The Workers' Mic, everybody, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher from the MCL here with Ken Edwards.
Hey, hey.
Interesting show. We're just got a little bit of time left in the show, but one thing I wanted to touch on, because it's something popular that we've been talking a lot about in the last few weeks, is the Chicago firefighters.
Right.
And how they've been understaffed and without a contract for like 1,200 days now.
Yep.
And the staffing is one of the biggest issues. Every time a firefighter is killed putting out a fire, the reports come back saying you have to properly staff. You have to put more people on the trucks. You know, it's there's just no no debate against it. And so the firefighters were among some of the most vocal critics of the city of Chicago's hiring freeze, which was announced this week by Mayor Brandon Johnson. And so I think as if it wasn't hard enough for them, this is just another signal. Like, because their main issue is staffing. And
it's not money.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a hiring freeze. That means if 10 firefighters leave tomorrow, they're not replacing
their jobs. They're not coming back.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Man.
Well, I just don't get it.
Yeah.
You don't have the money. Then balance your budget. Figure out a better way to do it. My property taxes were just increased.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I live in the city. They made no bones about increasing my property taxes. I think next year it'll be a 40% increase.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's Cook County. It's Chicago. So figure it out. Get the money. It's a giant city, right?
Which for sure.
Is third biggest city in the country.
As you always say, just get rid of the flowers. One other thing I wanted to touch base on, it was something kind of cringy in the news this week, was after Taylor Swift came out and endorsed Kamala Harris.
This is cringier than the cat eating?
This is maybe cringier.
Okay.
So Elon Musk posts after she endorses Kamala Harris and says, okay, Taylor, you win. I will give you a child and guard your cats with my life. Making a play on this childless Catwoman thing.
Yeah.
But saying, I will give you a child. So the internet, everyone's like, look at this guy. You have the world's richest man just saying he's going to you know, impregnate.
Bestow you a child?
Yeah. And I was like, you know, I don't know if he's saying that he wants to impregnate Taylor Swift, because as far as I can tell,
right.
Elon Musk loves the ladies, especially the ones that work for him. And he's got a lot of kids. So at this point, he might be saying, like, I will give you a kid.
Just give you one of mine.
Yeah, that's what he said. I'll give you a child.
Yes.
And basically, I think that she could pick whichever one she wants.
You know, it's not a bad idea.
Maybe it's worth taking a look.
You know what, Taylor, if you're listening, you might want to take him up on it.
Because
also his kid probably
stands to inherit
a lot of money.
Like, Taylor, you're rich.
Right?
But you're not Elon Musk rich.
But you could be.
You could be. There's an opportunity here.
So take him up on his offer.
So this is my version of this class action where I come up with a great idea, somebody gets rich, and I get nothing out of it.
Well, it's only Taylor Swift that can make this happen.
That's a really good point. Taylor, right? If you're listening, and we think that you are.
I don't know. Ed, what do you think? Let me ask you this, and I guess let me ask the audience this as well. Do professional, you know, athletes, movie stars, musicians, people that have such a following, should they weigh in? Should they not weigh in on politics? Do they have an obligation to?
I think the way that a couple of people have handled this recently, most recently Caitlin Clark and I'm trying to remember who else, but I've seen this from a few other people, is that it's about using the platform to encourage people to register to vote and get involved and make the decision that's right for their family. So I think that that's sort of a less polarizing way to do it. But if circumstances are extreme enough or you feel strongly about it, everybody's got a First Amendment right to say what they want.
I think that's exactly right.
And if Taylor Swift is like,
nobody's yelling at Kid Rock.
There's no question. Well, nobody cares what Kid Rock says.
Kid Rock cares what Kid Rock says.
Yeah, I think I saw him on the side of 59 selling flowers the other day.
That's nice.
Or at least somebody that looks just like Kid Rock.
But yeah, I know. Look, and she's got a quarter billion followers or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they said as soon as she announced that, like literally the website to register to vote
crashed. I'm not surprised.
Because her folks were going out and registering to vote. That's a big deal.
It is.
So kudos to her, whatever.
We've got to wrap up the show.
All right. Yeah, we got to
run. That was a great show.
Yep.
Thanks for being with us. Finally, one last thing. Jim Sweeney, what'd you think about the show today?
I do want to say this is a great forum, and we are getting the word out. I hear more and more good things about this.
I'll never get tired of hearing that.
Me too.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
See you next week.
The preceding episode of The Worker's Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of The Worker's Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.